Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Hi, friends. It's Diane with Someone Gets Me, this great visionary playground podcast that we have. And today, with the magic of technology, I am sitting with Sarah Santa Croce, and she's in Switzerland, and I am in Florida in the United States. And we have created this great new relationship through a friend of ours, Paul Zelizer. You've probably already listened to his episode, and that was great too. I'm so glad to meet Sarah and bring her on the show because we're going to talk about using empathy and compassion and kindness and being just an authentic, real person when it comes to your life and, more importantly, your business. And in my world, our handshake is our business card and our smile is our logo. So whether we're in business as an entrepreneur or we're a human being just living, we have a business of sharing who we are and what we're about. So I'm so excited to welcome Sarah onto the show and talk about all these powerful things. Welcome, Sarah.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Diane. It's so fun to hang out with you.
Oh, we're going to have so much fun today. I'm so excited to have this great conversation. And I'd like to start with, tell us a little bit about who you are. How'd you get here? Kind of like where you were born and what your life has been like. Because from our conversations already, I'm fascinated. I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a good place to post our little joke that we just talked about offline. So I was not born in Sweden, but in Switzerland. And I'm saying that because oftentimes when talking to Americans, they're confusing Sweden and Switzerland just because they start both with SW. So that's the kind of insider joke. So yes, born and raised in Switzerland. And it gets even more confusing, I think, because I speak pretty well English, right? So people are like, huh? Like, how does that work? I thought they spoke French in Switzerland or German. And my mother tongue is actually German. So I grew up in the Swiss German part of Switzerland. And really stayed. Actually, let me tell that story of my growing up. Sometimes we kind of skip over that, but I think it kind of plays a big role in my life and what I do today. So gonna go into that. I grew up in what I now refer to a hippie community. So my parents and their friends bought an apartment building with six different apartments. We each lived in our own apartment, but it was those six families just like in the same building, and we spent a lot of time together. Like, we ate together, we played together, we sang together. The adults, obviously, there was a lot of decision making around, I don't know, garden and, you know, who pays for what and all these kind of common decisions. It was normal to me because that's just, you know, that was life. That's how I grew up. But then once I kind of grew older and started to see that it was not normal to everybody else, it's like people were like coming to my place. And then there was we never locked a door. So people just kind of like all the other people from the building just walked in and out. And my friends, I remember my first boyfriend, he's like, what's up with that? Can't they even knock? Like, why did they just walk in? I'm like, don't mind them. They're like family, right? So yeah. So that was kind of the setting in which I grew up. And so it was very community-based. Those values of community, fairness, equality were super important. Besides that, my dad and my mom were very politically engaged for the working force. So it was all about, you know, socialism and equality and all that. So it was an interesting setting in which to grow up in. And interestingly enough, as you know, I grew older, I think about at 18, I actually said, okay, enough of that, I'm going to move out. I was very independent at an early age and decided to move to Paris for a year. So I moved to Paris, and then Yeah, I think it was starting then that I said, okay, I want to be completely different. If I felt like I was not interested in politics. I was not really interested in any of the things that my parents did. And I felt like, okay, I'm going to go into business. You know, this is the real life. Business is the real life. And so that's kind of how I then, you know, started working and really started paying more attention to business. And it feels like to me, like now what I'm doing now is coming full circle and saying, wait a minute, this part of me that, you know, was the part of growing up, those values and all of that, it feels like they've been hidden inside me for a long time. And it was like I was wearing this mask that I'm finally saying, enough, I need to take that off so that the full self can show up again. So that was the story of the bringing up.
That sparks a question for me. And that is, when you were talking about all those qualities being hidden and now you're bringing them back out. In Switzerland, when you decided to go out and be different and be in the business world, was it one of those things where there was business in one place and then the rest of the world, like you had to be the certain way to be in business? Because like a lot of times over here, I was always taught when I was younger that if you're going to be in business, you have to look a certain way and be a certain way and everything, and basically separate yourself from kindness and compassion and authenticity. Now it's, you know, it's coming back around to that now. But when I was younger, it was like that. Is that a similar kind of experience to what you had?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It felt like I had to kind of, you know, show up as the professional Sarah, which I've never seen. My dad had his own business, consulting business as well. And to me, he was not the business type, right? It's like, you're a hippie, you're not the business type. Let me be the business person. and especially because I chose LinkedIn. So I specialized in the platform LinkedIn. And, you know, out of all the platform, it's probably the most business-like,
right,
somehow sterile chamber of commerce-like platform. So it's just really interesting that I chose that one. And I kind of had to wear this mask. I wasn't wearing a suit, but it felt like I was wearing a suit the whole time.
Wow. Yes. And speaking to you now, I can't even imagine you being in a sterile kind of, you know, inauthentic plastic world. It doesn't even make sense to me. And I completely understand that trajectory though. And I think without that experience, the passion and the amazing power that you have with what you're doing today wouldn't be there, because you have both sides and you have all this information to weave together. So how's it been for you being a woman, a leader in business? You're not just, you know, hanging out, you're doing some really mighty things. And so you're a woman who's in a leadership role in a big way in our world. And how is that for you? Is it comfortable? How do you sit with that? Because that's a big thing.
Yeah. It's never been uncomfortable for me. Again, I think I grew up, there was so much talk about equality in our family, any friends of friends. To me, it was just normal that I had exactly the same chances as any guy. So to me, it was never an issue. I never experienced any kind of equality in terms of, you know, professionally speaking. So, but I obviously acknowledge and see that that's not the case everywhere. So I guess I consider myself lucky that I've had this upbringing and also have never been in this situation.
Oh, that is really amazing, because even in other large countries in the United States, there's a lot of discrimination of women in business, and for a woman to rise to a place of leadership that is more visionary or more progressive happens more today. Mm-hmm. But it's still a longer road. And so I was curious how that was for you, because it sounds more seamless for you that it was, that the more of the awareness was what was happening inside of you. Like, hold on, I want to be my real self versus external pushing so much.
Yeah. And I really, I'm, you know, thankful to my parents, because I think if I hadn't had that upbringing, then there might have been more of that. If I, like, my parents job shared as I was growing up, my dad, you know, was the one who taught me how to clean bathrooms. So there were really, there was this, at a very like familiar level already, I was shown that we have equal rights, which also means we have equal responsibilities. So I think if I hadn't had that upbringing, I think it would have been probably very different for me.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. So I have a few personal questions for you about how you approach things a little bit, because I think that your mission to bring more empathy and authenticity and kindness into business and into the world is a really powerful one. But I have a couple kind of like backstory questions. And one is, do you ever have difficulty with overthinking or getting in your head so much where your heart feels like, where'd my heart go? Or something like that, where you feel yourself even a little bit more split off than you would like it to be.
It's funny. I said I would trust your intuition, and there it is. Yes. Definitely too much in my head. I'm a highly sensitive introvert, and so I spend a lot of time in my head. Sometimes forgetting to open the heart and probably also let other people in, to have that kind of communication, because I'm always up there planning, strategizing, and, you know, coming up with the big plans that I forget to actually make the time and open the heart to have these conversations. Yes.
Right. Because sometimes when we're in our head like that, we forget even to breathe fully, much less anything else. Right. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Breathe. Okay. Right. And I was wondering if that ever happened to you. So that makes me feel a little better, because I'm like, you're so calm when I talk to you. And I'm like, I wonder if she gets in her head, you know? So what are some things you do to help yourself open your heart up when you notice that you're in your head? There's a lot of people who listen to the show who ask for my guests to talk about how they get on the other side of overthinking and also procrastination. So that I want to bring that into the conversation as well, where that they kind of feel like they hit a wall personally when they're trying to live their mission because their head is in the way and their heart's not so awake. So do you have any tips or things maybe that you do that you could share with everybody that would inspire them to try maybe so that they could be more in their heart?
I think what helped me with figuring out or really finding that place in my heart and kind of open that window a little bit more. Actually, I did some work with a therapist or a coach, and she said, you know, just open the door. And that didn't feel good to me, because then I was like, well, then kind of like, because I'm highly sensitive, if I just open the door, then all of these other emotions are just going to kind of like drown me and run over me. So that didn't feel good. So what I then suggested is, can I just open a little window that I can communicate through and not, you know, still have the distance. I very much need this distance so that I don't get overwhelmed. I have, you know, very few really good friends, but I'm very close to those friends, but I'm not a person who needs 20 friends. So distance is important to me, realizing that I need this distance, but being able to communicate through this distance, maybe, like, for example, for my community, they want me to communicate with them. And so they feel like I'm their best friend. And I'm like, well, that's not really going to work for me. I can't be best friends with all these people. So I'm like, well, I can open the window and be close, but yet there's enough distance for me to feel safe and have my boundaries. So does that speak to the what you had in mind about the heart?
That's absolutely beautiful. And I kind of use the analogy, which is very similar to your door versus window, of like a cell membrane where it has different opening levels. And so because I'm an intuitive and I'm an empath and I can absorb energy, I have to really learn how to like discern what to let in and how much of it and how often and everything. I love your door and window analogy. That's like really cool, because it's true. And you also bring up another point that I think is important, and that is relationship. That when we're really in relationship with others, that doesn't mean we're best friends, but we do have a relationship. And I work with a lot of business people who were running businesses, and I've heard a couple people say, well, people are going to want too much out of me, so I'm just going to stay really distant, and I'm not going to let anybody know who I am, and I'm just going to put everything up on social media, but my face is never going to be there, and I'm never going to be part of it because I don't want anyone to suck me dry. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, relationship is not just friends. I was shaking my head no too. I'm like, well, wait a second, because we're building relationships always. And if we're going to be successful as a human being, because we're meant to be in relationship, and if we're in business of any type, but for either one of those independently, even if we're unwilling to build relationship, whether it's through the window because it's of our energy or our ability to take whatever that feeling is, but also if the door is wide open and people can come and go, you know, there's like all those different variances, and we're not willing to be in that kind of flow, then that cheats us and everybody around us relationally.
Yeah.
And just because you lead your community with amazing things doesn't mean you're their best friend, but you have a relationship with them.
Yeah. And I think it really creates, like, if I think about the online kind of, you know, business, which is where we are both in, a lot of people lead that way with this idea, oh, you know, they can see whatever, whoever I am, and but I'm not going to let them in. So what this creates is a feeling of exclusion for everybody in their tribe. So some people have these giant tribes, like, but there's still this disconnect. And I think that's not what people are craving today. They're craving to be included. And again, you don't have to, you know, become best friends, but there needs to be some kind of inclusion, a dialogue rather than just talking at the community. So I think,
yeah, speaking with instead of yelling at kind of thing. And yeah, I think the pendulum has swung back. You know, people went from overly connected to not connected and not really caring about being that connected. And then people that are connected more to their heart and their soul and are sensitive are going, whoa, 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 whoa. We're losing that human part and we're meant to be connected. And so now I think it's swinging back the other way.
That's true.
And that's kind of fascinating to watch. I'm kind of glad it's swinging back. It's been very kind of crazy with everybody disconnected everywhere. Yeah. So what do you do to decompress or take the stress out of your life? You know, because highly sensitive people who are in their head and having to open their heart and all of those things, we have to have a way to help pass the stress through so we don't get sick. You know, I call it empath distress disorder. Mm-hmm. What do you do to help yourself with your stress level or just to stay balanced?
Yeah. I can give you an example of just last night, right? Because usually it hits me in my sleep. So my mind just doesn't stop and keeps going. So I have, you know, a bedtime routine where I meditate and write down three things I'm grateful for. So I'm kind of ending the day in the same way helps. Sometimes, like last night, I still wake up in the middle of the night. And I used to, probably 2-3 years ago, I used to just, you know, freak out and put myself into the state of annoyance that I'm awake again. And how horrible is it to, you know, stay awake and think about all these things. And now I just gotten much better at just being with the, you know, with being awake and yes, you know, trying to breathe and kind of put myself to sleep again. But if that doesn't work, then just say, okay, fine. Well, you know, let me actually go get up and, you know, write things down that go through my head or find something else to do. So not freak out and actually thank my mind. That's what I did last night, and I had forgotten about this technique, but thank my mind for being there for me, because all it's doing is actually trying to help me solve problems and help me keep me safe in a way, right? Mm-hmm. And so the minute I did that, and instead of resisting, I guess it's the same old thing about, you know, resisting and it gets more intense. So instead of resisting, I'm like, thank you, mind, for, you know, trying to help me. But, you know, you can go now, please. I'd like to sleep. So that really helped. And I was then able to go back to sleep.
Right. And so that thank you was an act of surrender, right? And for me, the function of surrender means energy conservation. And so when you kind of changed the paradigm on your mind and didn't let it run rampant and said, well, thank you very much. And at the same time, I really need to sleep. That gave you that sense of surrender so your whole system could relax. And that's where the safety is, you know? So that's a brilliant suggestion. And I don't think anybody's ever suggested something like that on the show yet. So I love it. And that's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Surrendering is big. I have this little box. Maybe like gets a bit too woo-woo, but I have this little box where I put little notes inside and say, you know, this I'm not going to worry about anymore. Here, you take care of it. And, you know, sometimes you have to look at the things again. But yeah, it helps to just kind of physically do something to say, I'm surrendering this to whoever, you know, not my thing anymore.
Yes, that's funny. I have a jar that does the same thing, that when something's like in my head and in my head and in my head and in my head, I'm like, okay, all right, this is not going anywhere fast. I write it down and I stick it in the jar. Right. And then eventually at some point, someday, I'll look at it. And most of the time when I open it up about every quarter,
taken care of.
It's all done. Or I forgot even what I was even thinking about. Like I look at it and go, I don't even know what this is, what it even
is. Why did I even worry about that?
Yeah. Right. No, I found a couple years ago, and I can honestly tell you that I have absolutely no idea what I was referring to. So that means that what was in my mind was so important had zero importance in the long run. Like not, it wasn't even on the radar in the long run. Right. And so having a jar or a box or a place to put it up on the shelf and say, we'll get back to you is a great, not only is it an act of surrender, it's an act of trust and faith in the universe that, that everything's working the way it's supposed to. So that I don't think it's woo-woo at all. And, or maybe we're both woo-woo. I don't know.
We're both woo-woo and that's fine.
Right? I know. It's crazy. So another fun question that just popping in my mind right now is, where has been your favorite place to travel?
I would have to say, yeah, probably Vietnam or maybe Cambodia. Yeah, we like Asia. And I say that as if we're going there every 2 years. Last time we went was before the kids, and we have plans to go back now that they're 13 and 16. But yeah, Asia is, you know, part of, it's so different, I guess. I mean, we've been to the US and Europe and all of these places, but they're still very similar. What I like is places that are so completely different that you're just in awe, like, you know, watching these people and watching their completely different habits and traditions. And that's what amazes me. Yeah.
So what was your one of favorite exciting different experience in Vietnam or Cambodia? Share with people, because not everybody has been to Asia. And what is it that draws you, that like kind of lights that part up in you?
I think it's just a different way of what comes to mind is, first of all, yes, the food. That's always the one that, you know, kind of impresses you the most, because you do eat three times per day and you're like, oh, we don't even know what to order and everything is so different. But also the way people relate to each other, how these ways to communicate and ways to you know, friendships and business relationships are so very different than we are used to here. I even see that, thinking about it now, I even see that the difference between Europe and the US. And I think when we talked last time, you asked me about, you know, is it different in Europe, the way you do business or marketing? And yes, it's different. So imagine if it's different between the two of us, how different it is between, you know, an Asian country and us. And so those kind of differences fascinate me. And what I enjoy most is just sitting at a cafe somewhere and watch people. And that, just as an introvert, that's my favorite thing to do, because I'm with people, but I don't have to, you know, actually communicate with them. I just watch their daily lives.
We would have so much fun traveling together, because that's what I love to do. It's like, because I'm an introvert, like just give me a cool chair somewhere and let me hang out here and just watch the scenery and all the people and if I want to engage, I can, but I'm not feeling pressured to. So we would have a great time traveling together. Yeah. Two introverts on a little trip, right? Yeah. So how did you weave into the kind of marketing you're doing now? Because you're working on LinkedIn, and a lot of what you're doing has to do with empathy and kindness and compassion and bringing a different feel to the marketplace than the more hardened, sterile, kind of cold marketplace. So share a little bit about how you've gotten to where you're going. And of course, it's morphing and growing and changing all the time anyway. And how you got to the belief and the style that you have now. How did you get here?
I think we don't change unless something is so bad that we just can't stand going forward that way anymore. And that's what happened for me after close to 12 years running this consulting LinkedIn business and obviously doing my own marketing and seeing all the different marketing techniques and programs out there. I was just like, I was also hitting 40. So it was like my midlife crisis maybe, but I was like, what am I going to do? How am I going to continue this thing, for the rest of my life? I just feel like I felt out of integrity. That's really what bothered me the most. I feel like I have to market my business. On top of that, I'm teaching other people how to market on LinkedIn. And it just didn't feel integrous anymore. I felt like I'm applying these techniques that, the other big marketing gurus out there said that's what you have to do. And it was a lot of this cookie cutter approach and using these strategies like talk about the pain, use fear, use urgency, all of these marketing best practices that we hear about all the time. And I'm like, I'm so done with that. I just don't want to do that anymore. And so that's when I was like, well, I need to do something differently because it's not working. And at about that time, I had this, I call it a download because that term really just came to me, the gentle business revolution. And it was also when I kind of dug into my own story and these values and the story with my growing up happened. I'm like, well, yeah, what my role really is in business is to show that you can do business with empathy, with kindness, and business does not have to be tough. Business is business. That's BS, because business can be human and can be gentle. So that's how this all came about. And so the main mission is really to transform marketing into something that is not only feels good and feels aligned with our values, but also does not use those fear-based techniques, but uses empathy instead.
Wow. Using empathy rather than fear in marketing. I think some people would hear you say that and go, what? I think that because you're so used to having to be defended against being sold, like the used car salesman thing and, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And once they run into somebody who just authentically cares and has empathy, then I think it would confuse some people. And I've interviewed on this show Paul Zelizer, who we both know, and he is Awarepreneurs, right? And it's about that. And I've also interviewed Dani Gardner, and she does a lot of, she calls it quiet marketing in a different fashion, but the same idea, similar ideas to you. Mm-hmm. And lots of other people, George Cowell too, and Jason Stein, there's lots of people that I know that are more and more saying it's coming from our heart and it's our empathy. And that is where the authentic human connection is. And then from there, things grow organically in a way that's productive for all people, right? Mm-hmm. So how have you made the shift? What did you have to do to make the shift from the sterile business world to living authentically with your empathy and your kindness leading the charge, so to speak? How did you do that? That's a big shift.
Yeah, I will say that I like my subscribers on my list, my people, when I started writing about this, they're like, Sarah, you were always authentic. What are you saying? You were never so in a way, I feel like, yes, that's probably true. I was never like the pushy car salesman, but still, I feel personally that I have used techniques that didn't feel good to me. So that there was not, you know, it was not authentic because I applied someone else's recipe for success or cookie cutter approach or whatever you want to call it. So the transition for me was just basically saying, let me start noticing. I think that's the first step really in any kind of transformation or transition is let me start noticing and let me sit with how it feels. Yes. Because when we know how, when we're busy and we're just kind of in the doing mode, we don't really pay attention. It's just like, oh, that's part of what we do. And let me send out another email. And let me say that the cart closes in 20 minutes. You know, it's just the doing thing. But once you actually start to pay attention, that's when you're like, whoa, I'm doing this? Like, what did I just say in that headline? And not just for ourselves, because I don't want to go like, you know, beat ourselves up, but also seeing what other people use in their marketing and how does that make us feel on the receiving end. Like I believe the current marketing paradigm is a big contribution to the level of anxiety and angst we're feeling all over the world. It's part of yeah, it's really part of that. And so really starting to be aware and say, how does that make me feel? And do I want to make people feel like that, really? I know that heart-centered entrepreneurs will all say, no, that's not, I'm just doing it because I thought that's how it's done. Start becoming aware. And then the second step would be to say, okay, I give myself permission to not do it that way anymore.
Yes.
And it's only you who can give yourself permission. You can't wait for someone else to give you permission. So saying, hey, I'm different, I'm going to do it differently. And yeah, this enough is enough. Let me change.
Right. And it's coming from the inside, you know, mm-hmm. And that's what you're saying. It's not about outside, but I love the awareness part that you're talking about, how when I'm experiencing somebody else's marketing, how does it make me feel as well as mm-hmm. what I say, right? Because mm-hmm. I notice it. And I think I agree with you that I think it's a lot of the angst and anxiety that's going on in the world because it just keeps feeding. It's almost like it's a hungry animal that keeps going and going. And a mm-hmm. few people have said, no, we're out. We're not doing that and anymore. And now we can live in an authentic way. It's probably a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And I think that your empathy has been probably your big gift all along, whether you knew it or not, because I think it bled through even when you were following the old rules.
Maybe.
Because you drew people who were like, well, Sarah, you've always been that way. And I think then the disconnect is inside, where I'm following these rules that disconnect me from me authentically.
Yes.
And so, but your beauty kind of shone through all that stuff. And
maybe
those
saw that I was just applying someone else's stuff. Yeah.
Or you were doing what everyone was doing. Mm-hmm. So that didn't make you wrong or bad or anything. It just meant that's just the way it was. And now there's another way.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think you can hide who you are.
No, that's true. Yeah. And I think that's the message to everyone listening as well. I'm not trying to point fingers and say you're doing it wrong, right? That's not what this is about. Is this about, because it's about saying, hey, did you know that there's another way? Mm-hmm. And that creates such a big relief. I believe it's like, for me, it was like this big weight that has been lifted. I'm like, ah, finally I can just show up as myself and bring everything and not worry about, you know, other people are anymore.
Right. I think it is greatly relieving. I remember when I first started learning that I didn't have to do it all those ways that were so uncomfortable that I was so resistant. I was like, I'm not doing that.
Right.
Not doing it. Okay. So that's the way that's going to work. Yeah. And another time to go, okay, fine, I'll do it. And then I still wouldn't do it because I couldn't. It was just didn't work for me internally. And then when people started saying, well, you need to do it this way or that way, and it started aligning more, then the learning curve was more a technicality.
Yeah.
Than the process. And so I made friends with it. And then it was much easier, of course, because now it's aligned.
Right.
And so I think that's really exciting. I love it. So what's the favorite part of your business for you? What's a favorite thing? You work for yourself. You live in a great country. You have a great family. And you obviously have shifted your business into something that's fulfilling your soul and your mission. So what's the favorite part you've got?
I think my favorite thing is creating new things. I love, you know, hanging out with my community and sharing now this new approach to marketing and having these community calls. And yet I think I love creating new things. So eventually, even this beautiful program that I created, I will get bored of it. So I need to, already plan now how am I going to keep it fresh? Because what I love most is creating new things.
That's wonderful. So tell us a little bit about the wonderful program you have going on now, like that you created. I want to hear about it.
It's called the Gentle Marketing Revolution. And so it really is, a marketing program that is supposed to show you how to bring more of the empathy and kindness and specifically bring more of you to your marketing. So I call it a hybrid between personal development and real pragmatic marketing know-how and expertise. Because what I realized going through my own journey, it is doing that inner work first so that you can then become that person that bigger person that you want to be. And so it's part being and part doing. And the other thing that I think is different in this program is that in most marketing programs, you always talk about that the target audience or the ideal client. You gotta, really narrow down who that is. And I agree with that. However, I think it is most important to figure out first who you are. And again, there's that personal development piece, because if you're just always running and chasing after this supposedly ideal client, which is what I did for 12 years, that's still not going to create a joyful, sustainable business if that ideal client is not a good match for you. So most people skip that step and go directly into the who's your ideal client without ever thinking, but who are you? What are your values? What's your story? And then let's find a match for you, because, hey, you're in your own business. You left that corporate job because you wanted to create your own rules, your own business. So why would you now, kind of create all these different bosses? Because in the end, that's what that is. If you're having clients who are not really your ideal clients, they're basically your bosses, right?
So right.
I kind of reversed the model and said, let's start with you first. Let's figure out who you are. And I go through tons of personality tests and human design and astrology to really figure out, well, how are you wired so that we can now find your ideal match, so that every time you show up for one of these client calls, you're just like hanging out with your girlfriends or, guy friends and just having a blast.
Oh, that's a riot. So in human design, who are you? What are you?
I'm a generator and I'm a 5-1 profile. So.
Oh, wow. I'm a manifesting generator. That's why. And I love to create. So I'm like, I have to ask her. I had Sandy Freshy on the show on the Someone Gets Me. And she had done my human design for me. Uh-huh. And then we were talking and I was interviewing about her because I was so fascinated. And then she started sharing stuff about me on my show. I had all these epiphanies. I was like, oh my God, oh, that's why I'm like this. That's why I'm like this. It was so the most profound thing that helped me put together things about my way mm-hmm. that previously had been kind of looked at, not necessarily as a liability, but some of them kind of close. Like, why can't I do it this other way? Well, it's because that's not how I'm built. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the moment I realized that, I'm like, oh, all right. It just lifted all these things. I love human design. I think it's really powerful when you're really trying to get more clear.
It's so empowering for the entrepreneur, because what you just said, all of a sudden you have all these realizations and you're like, oh, so yeah, if I do it this way, it will work for me and it'll be more joyful because I'm in my design. I'm acting in my design, right?
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. I love it. I love it. So Do you have a success story of somebody that you started working with? I'm assuming that since you worked with LinkedIn and professionals, that people from anywhere in our viewing audience, which is 63 countries now, I believe, can contact you, right? And we'll put your contact information in the show notes. And so y'all can, if you love what Sarah's saying, contact her and get her to help you out. That'd be really cool. So give us a little client story, you know, somebody who's a success story, something. So people who are listening to you and really saying, wow, she's speaking to me, what would it be like to engage with you professionally? Like if I was going to hire you or I just wanted to be in your tribe, what would that be like?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really a transformation in terms of, you know, clearly business, because most of the stuff we talk about in the program is still business oriented. But the way I want to run this differently is really hold the space for the human interactions as well. So we're actually creating friendships on these calls. Again, I'm not going to be best friends with everybody, but there's friendships that are forming in the community, right? And that's so beautiful to watch. And kind of the most, if you look at the testimonials, the most common feedback is really finding clarity in who they are, who they want to serve, and just finding that marketing can actually be fun if you let it be in a creative process. That's kind of what I want people to take out of it. So it's freeing themselves up from this marketing anxiety. It's interesting because the first title for the program was called Anxiety Free Marketing, because I really felt that there was so much anxiety around this topic of marketing. Everybody I talked to told me, I hate marketing, and it's just, you know, it's this evil thing that I just have to do. And so I was like, well, let's change that. Marketing can actually be fun, but it can only be fun if you're, you know, bringing your whole self to it. And if you don't look at what everybody else does, but just stay in your own lane and apply that. So yeah, that I think that would be the most kind of what people say. And another thing they say is that it's a nice mix between the doing and being, and that they've never seen that before. Mm. So it's really, I think the last 3 years for me have been this really personal journey also into the personal work and letting that out into the business world and saying that there is space to, you know, be a bit woo-woo or talk about these vulnerable things that I've never shared anywhere else. And that if the leader, in quotation marks, the leader opens up and shares these things, that creates then a safe space for everybody else to also say, hey, this feels different. This feels so safe. Let me be vulnerable as well. And I think that's really the space I want to create and the human connections that I want to bring into business.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It feels, you're speaking about it, and I feel my shoulders go from up here to like my whole system just, like I can finally exhale being and listening to you, like being in your presence and listening to you, because I think a lot of the marketing ramp is so anxiety producing and I just feel so much more relaxed just listening to you just now. It's like, whoa, I love it. I love it. So I've covered a lot of bases, and you've been so generous this morning, and this morning to me, afternoon for you. What, is there anything I didn't say or any question I didn't ask that you wanted to talk about? Did I miss anything?
No, I think we talked about a lot. It's really about, you know, using the technology that we have available. I'm not saying that we're ditching all of that, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do this. So technology,
and we wouldn't know each other. If there was not technology, we wouldn't know each other. And we have a great new friendship starting. And it was because without technology, we wouldn't know each other.
So we're not saying, let's go back to the Ice Age and you know, only people that we can shake hands with, but we are saying, let, you know, use the technology to create more human connection, not less. So don't automate more and, you know, create more exclusion, use it to create inclusion, because you can. I mean, Zoom calls are great, right? You can really bring everybody in from all over the world, and we show up on camera and we're real people. We're not just some kind of voice in a webinar with 1,000, 2,000 people signed up. So it's really creating this place, this virtual space where we can all connect with each other.
Yes. Absolutely. I believe in that. I love to use Zoom, and I love to use things that can help me create with and connect with people all over the world. And just, it's a different kind of connection. At first, years ago, it felt kind of weird to me, and friends of mine were saying it fulfilled them. It didn't me so much, but now I'm seeing how those relationships are different and it works for me better. So some of it's kind of like a comfort learning curve thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's funny that you bring that up, because in the first beta round in January this year, I had someone who said, I didn't think, I was kind of skeptical about this group calls and, you know, how are you going to really create connections? And at the end of the course, she's like, I was blown away, and I'm now going to use that in my own business, because really, you know, there was tears, and you can really feel the emotions even at a distance.
So, right. Absolutely. So is there anything I didn't ask you?
I think
that you want to say, I think we covered it all, right? I think that was a really good closing. So my last question of the day is, if you were going to be able to put any message you wanted on a billboard that the whole world would see, what would Sarah put on that billboard?
I would say, yeah, bring more empathy and kindness to the business world. It's what we need.
Yes. Bring more empathy and kindness to the business world. I love it, because we're all dealing with businesses, or are them, or whatever. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Sarah, for being on the show with me today. Gosh, what a blessing you are to this show and my life and our world. You know, you're really bringing a mighty force forward. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Well, everybody, you have been listening to Sarah Santa Croce from Switzerland, and she's amazing. So all her contact information is in the show notes, along with her longer bio. So if you really enjoyed what you were hearing her speak about, or you resonated with it, or maybe you felt a little weird rub in your soul, call her, contact her, reach out to her, and connect. Because in that connection will be an amazing opportunity for you. I don't know what it is, but I know if we feel it, it's time to follow it. That's how I use my intuition. So thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for Sarah for being here on Someone Gets Me. And remember, everybody, to put your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You are a rock star, and you're here with a purpose on purpose. Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit someonegetsme.com. Again, thanks for listening.